Today, on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Final Fantasy 2. I mean 4. I mean 2. I mean 2 in America, it was 4 in Japan. We talk about Final Fantasy. Welcome back, I'm your host Chris Bastian, and like I said a moment ago, we are going to be discussing the 1991 Super NES, I will say masterpiece, Final Fantasy 2/4. It's two in the US, it's 4 in Japan, for those of you who don't know. I'm your host Chris, and as is typical for this podcast, I've brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority about this given topic of a video game. My first expert has been on before. You will recognize his voice. He is all the way over in New York, and his name is...
Scott Ross.
Welcome back, Scott.
How's it going?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing over there?
Well, I'm a little confused. I thought this was a Final Fantasy Mystic Quest podcast, so I may have to bow out.
I hate you so much. I hate you so, so much. This is a Final Fantasy All the Bravest podcast, so...
Oh, that's even better.
So let's talk a little bit with you, sir. What type of video game gamer are you?
I am a RPG, action RPG, action adventure. I'm all about the third person type game. So any of those action games, any of the JRPGs, the action RPGs, you know, Zelda, Metroid, Mario, platformers. I'm a Nintendo fanboy, but I also love Diablo and... you know, there it is.
Okay. Where does Final Fantasy the series rank for you? Is it your favorite game series?
It is, but it has disappointed me as of late. So for nostalgia reasons, Final Fantasy is the greatest of all time because, you know, Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI, you know, 8 and 9 I loved as well. But, like, those games are just, like, those are the reason... That's the reason I love video games. Those games are just so fantastic. But recently, there's been a lot of other games that I've loved, you know, more. But as a whole, I do think it is the best series.
Okay. Is Final Fantasy 2/4 your favorite Final Fantasy?
It is not. But without Final Fantasy 2 or Final Fantasy 4... The game that was my favorite would never have been the game that it was. This was really the foundation of everything great with the Final Fantasy series.
I'm assuming you're talking about Final Fantasy VI?
I am.
Okay. And I'm just curious, is Final Fantasy VI your favorite role-playing game?
It is my number one favorite role-playing game.
Good choice, sir. That's why you're on this podcast.
There you go.
Great. Well, hold on to your thoughts and feelings. We'll come back to you. My next expert is here on mic with me. He's a newcomer to the show, and his name is...
John Luce.
John, welcome.
Hi.
I love having new people on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, hopefully this won't be your first show. It'll be the first of many.
Yeah, hopefully I don't screw it up.
You will be fine. So similar questions to you, sir, since we're talking about a video game. What are some of your favorite games, or what type of gamer are you?
I play a little bit of everything. I play a lot of shooters, a lot of action adventure. I play a ton of role-playing. I kind of grew up on the Super Nintendo role-playing games like Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger and Secret of Evermore. Mm-hmm. I kind of go a little bit everywhere. I don't play soccer games or hockey games or driving games.
So oddly specific, but I love it. Oh, those soccer games, man.
But I love, love, love a good Japanese role-playing game.
Okay. Is Final Fantasy 2/4 your favorite Final Fantasy?
It is not.
Oh.
But I think I pretty much agree with what Scott said. It laid the foundation for my favorite Final Fantasy, which is Final Fantasy VI.
Is Final Fantasy VI your favorite role-playing game?
No, it is my favorite game.
Oh!
Yes!
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Back to you, Scott. Is it your favorite game?
It is not my favorite game. It is very close, but it's not my favorite game.
FIFA 2002 is also really great.
Scott, what is your favorite game?
Well, you know my favorite game, and I'll hopefully be doing a podcast on that soon, but I am my favorite game is Super Smash Brothers.
You just got a very collective excited.
I can't tell you how excited I am about November 21st. I've been playing the DS version and getting my butt kicked by random people, probably 12-year-olds kicking my butt because I don't have access to the C-stick, and it's really pissing me off.
Okay, save it for the Smash podcast.
I hear the DS1 is really good.
Yeah, DS1 is supposed to be really good. Well, John, hold on to your thoughts and feelings. We will come back to Final Fantasy. As is typical for my podcast, I've brought on an outcast, somebody who is not as familiar, or dare I say, just not experienced this wonderful game. He's been on before, and his name is...
Jeremy Connie.
Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, you're a gamer.
Yeah.
But you haven't played Final Fantasy.
No, the first Final Fantasy I played was 7.
Have you played 6?
No.
Oh.
So by first, I mean the lowest number I've played.
Oh, okay.
It was the first, and I've only done anything past that.
Oh, you're a PlayStation kid.
I am.
Oh,
yeah.
We're like the same age, though. I don't get it. Did you not have a Super Nintendo? Or?
No, I did. And I just never had access to those games. I was playing Mega Man, I was playing Zelda, Metroid.
Mega Man X! You played Mega Man X!
Mega Man X, yes, I did. And I, for some reason, just did not hear about it and get into it until people around my school were talking about 7.
What about Chrono Trigger?
I played some of Chrono Trigger after I was young, like when I was in college.
Okay.
And just... like most of the times when I play a role-playing game, I got tired somewhere around 2/3.
Okay.
I mostly was trying to play it when I was in college, when I was super busy.
So Chrono Trigger lost your interest, is what you're saying.
What? Who are you?
At the time of playing, yes, it didn't captivate my interest as much as other things that were demanding my time.
We did an entire podcast on Zelda, and I'm thinking, wow, this dude's really cool. What a cool guy. And now, like, my entire image of you has just shattered. It's just gone.
Now, you gotta understand, I was super ambitious in college when I was trying to balance a lot of things, and I tried to ham-fist playing old video games into my schedule, and it just didn't work. And
you know who else was ambitious? You know who else was ambitious? Lavos. He's ambitious, too.
Nice, Scott. But I don't know if Jeremy necessarily gets that reference.
Nope.
Probably not. He didn't play it long enough. Oh.
I do look forward to playing Chrono Trigger all the way through it at some point.
So, Jeremy, what is one of your favorite role-playing... Well, what's your favorite Final Fantasy? Let me ask that.
I don't want to say it, because I know Scott's going to yell at me. It's 7.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay, right, Scott?
No, it's not okay!
All right. We'll talk about why that's not okay, but... Is Final Fantasy VII your favorite role-playing game?
That's a good question. Probably. I also, if not my other favorite, is Mario RPG. That was just a really well-constructed, fun game.
He earned some points with Mario RPG.
He went up like 4 clicks, so we're okay.
Do we count Paper Mario? Because that is... Paper Mario 2 is a fantastic game.
I've never played that.
Oh, just wonderful, wonderful play of, like, between 2D and 3D space.
Really well, we fun. Don't count that, Jeremy. This is a Final Fantasy podcast.
2D only.
Great, sir. Well, remember, you're the outcast, which means you are blessed with the imaginary conch of outcast, so you are allowed to question, comment, challenge anything that we bring up, or if there's something that you want to talk about, please. You have that power.
Cool. I will install grumpiness from my area of the table here and just use that as much as I can.
Sounds... delightful. Cool. Well, without further ado, let's talk a little bit about Final Fantasy II. People may be wondering why I keep saying Final Fantasy II/4. Let me just lay the stage work real quick for the development of this game. In America, in 1990, we got Final Fantasy for the NES, which was a huge hit. It was a huge marketing push by Nintendo. It might have been published by Nintendo. I don't remember. It may have been Squaresoft that published it here in the States, but it was very well received, more so than Dragon Warrior. And at this point, Final Fantasy, the first game, had been out in Japan for 3 or 4 years, and they were already on multiple sequels at that point. Two other games for the NES had come out at that time. So Squaresoft, when the Super NES was released 1 year later, decided to just go on and skip those games and release Final Fantasy IV. In order to not confuse Americans, they decided to call it Final Fantasy II. So, dear listener, if I call it 2/4, we're talking about the same game. To my experts, John, I'll start with you. Were you aware that we had missed out on some Final Fantasies when this came around?
Oh, at the time, no.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea, but I think with the advent of the internet around my middle school years, I want to say, that's when I learned that there's three other ones that I could not get my hands on.
Yeah. I remember Nintendo Power, after the fact, did a kind of like a one-page article about games we never got. So, like, the real Mario Brothers 2, they showed screenshots from that, and they talked about that. And then they talked about Final Fantasy 2 and 3 for the Nintendo, and they showed screenshots. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've missed two Final Fantasies. That's awful. But I dealt with it. Scott, were you aware that we had jumped over some games when this came out in America?
Not when it came out, no. Even through the end of Final Fantasy III, which is 6 in Japan, I didn't know that we missed another one, you know, after 4.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue until I think I was in, like, either high school or college. Like, it was a long time before I figured that out. I think it was, like, end of high school or college.
Yeah, and this made for an interesting jump, because going from Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3 to 4, you see the progression, but jumping from the first game to the fourth game in the series, which is obviously what we did here in the States, was a huge jump. And it wasn't just because we jumped to the Super Nintendo, but play mechanics had changed. I want to talk about first impressions of this game, and I'll start off.
Wait, did they never release anything, any of the Japanese in between, the 2 and 3 from Japan?
They did long after the fact. Actually, one of them you can get on the PlayStation.
Huh?
They did do re-releases of Final Fantasy 2 and 3. You can get 2 as part of, like, an Origins package for the PlayStation.
I'm playing 3 right now on the DS.
Oh, yeah, they did a full remake of 3 on the DS in 3D. It's actually really good. I like 3.
Japan's 3.
Japan's 3, yeah. How do you like it?
I like it okay. There are a few things that irk me. I don't like the job system so much. And there's one glitch. I don't know if it's a glitch, but I call it a glitch, where if you change jobs, you have to battle as many times as your level was in your previous job to get your skills back.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes forever. Mm. So there are a few things that I kind of struggle with. But it's actually fun to play, and it's actually my first time playing one of the first 3 Final Fantasies. So
cool. Well, just to bring it back to Final Fantasy IV, I encountered this game in a Blockbuster. That tells you how old I am. And I remember walking in, and I wanted to rent a game for the Super Nintendo, because all I had was Mario World and Pilot Wings at the time. And I remember seeing the modest red box art with just the logo of Final Fantasy and a sword through the logo. And of course, you have a sword on your box art that gets my attention at 12 or 11 or however old I was. And I rented this from Blockbuster, knowing it was an RPG, and fell in love with it, and continually rented it until I beat it. And I had to do it on weekends, so, like, I would rent the game for a weekend, and then hope that nobody would erase my save if somebody else rented it.
Wow.
Yeah, I did not actually own this game for a very long time, and by the time I actually decided to purchase it, it was very hard to find, so I had to buy it off of a friend, and he charged me a ton of money for it, but it was worth it, and I still have that cartridge copy for my Super Nintendo. So I was blown away by this game. I've described this to people as this was my equivalent of like Star Wars in a video game form. The characters, the story, the epicness, the scope, traveling to the underworld, to the moon. You start as this knight who seeks redemption. This was just all epic to me as a kid, and it really grabbed me so much more so than any other role-playing game I can think of up until that point. And I was playing PC games. I was playing, you know, a little bit of Eye of the Beholder and whatnot. But just something about this game really grabbed me. So that's kind of my first impression. John, what about you? When did you first play Final Fantasy IV?
Oh, well, my brother rented it, and we had a little TV in our basement, and I would sit and watch my brother play this game because I was probably 8 or so. And when he was done playing, because he'd just binge it. And then when he was, like, the few hours he wasn't playing, I would sneak on and try and play. Mm-hmm. And so for the first 2 or 3 times I played it, I didn't get very far because I was just doing it in between my brother's time. And then I started running it myself once I was old enough to let my mom rent video games for myself. And I kind of the same thing as you did. I would try and play as much as I could and then have to return it and then hope that it wasn't erased. And then, of course, there'd always be like the panic situation where you'd go to one video game store in the town and it would be gone and you'd have to go to another one. I did that a lot with both 4 and 6.
Oh. 6 was very expensive when it came out, so yeah. Do you remember just first impressions of when you played it? Like, what captivated it?
I distinctly remember that moment when Cecil leaves the castle at the beginning, and there's that like script that comes down, and just how like majestic and adventurous and amazing it all seemed, and it just felt like this like sweeping fantasy tale that I just wanted to continue and find out what happened next. Like the story and the characters, it was unlike anything I'd played before.
Scott, what about you? When was the first time you played 4?
Well, my situation is a little bit different. Both my my dad and my stepmom were big time into video games, so it was both a good and a bad thing. It was good because they needed to buy all of the new games because they were adults and they bought every game that they wanted to. The bad news was is they got to play all of them first, and I kind of got the leftovers. And I would watch them play this game a little bit because you know I was only 11. Or 12, I guess. And then at the time, I wasn't a lover of RPG yet. You know, I hadn't figured it out. So I did things like, you know, they had their saved game, so I played the end of the game, like really before I started my own game, you know? Mm-hmm. I remember the moment I was hooked on the game. And that's when you go to the town, you go to Rydia's town and you open the package and it's this awful bomb monster that destroys the entire town. And it's so cool because you're the bad guy. I mean, you start the game off with the bad guys. You're a bad guy. It's great.
You bring up a point that I kind of want to just segue into, which is the characters. One thing about the characters, there's so many interesting characters in this game, and I feel this is really the first Final Fantasy that does characters right, or at least the characters that we got, because you didn't really have characters in the first game. You had just generic classes, which was fun to assemble your own party of, like, 4 white wizards, or, you know, 4 white mages, or 4 warriors, but they had no character. I feel this was the game that was like, you know what, we're going to really push storytelling in addition to combat and technique. And one thing I love about the characters in this game is the lead character, Cecil, which I pronounced Cecil, or I'm sorry, I pronounced Cecil as a kid, but I understand it's probably Cecil. He's so interesting because he's not a youth in my eyes. Like, he's already an accomplished captain at this point. So in my mind, even as a kid, he was already like late 20s, maybe early 30s to me. And he was somebody who had already gone on adventures and established himself as a great warrior, and he didn't like who he was. And that was so fascinating to me. And very much against, you know, the wide-eyed youth who is learning to become a great warrior or wizard. You know, he's not young, he's not inexperienced, he's very experienced, and I really liked that. And to see him fight against his past and what he was doing to these people and working for the bad guys was so fascinating. And then, of course, you have his best friend, Kane. So let's stick with the main characters just for the time. Scott, I want to jump back over to you. You mentioned working for the bad guys and that scene at the beginning where you destroy the village. What characters jump out to you from this?
What characters jump out? I mean, obviously the relationship between Cecil and Rosa. It's funny because it's one of the few games where the love is already there. Like in a lot of other games, you got they fall in love or like they you find love or you know love happens later. Blah blah blah. Blah. This one, it's like no. You're an established captain. Not only that, you're in a relationship, a committed relationship. You live together. They're probably married already. They don't really say that, but they probably are. You know, it's the love of your life. She's with you no matter what. She knows you're working with the bad guys. You know, it's kind of, and it's all, you know, it's really different. It's very different than any other story. Even the later Final Fantasy games, they don't really do that again. Then you have Kane. You have the best friend, your buddy. And who ends up being manipulated into betraying you. Oh, man. Like, you have the girl, Rydia, one of the main characters, the summoner. She's the girl that you rescue from the town. She watches you kill her parents and kill her entire town. And like, oh, the way they develop that story with that character. I mean, it's just fantastic how they develop each and every one of these small characters. And also these characters like come and go as well. It's not like in the first Final Fantasy and in Dragon Warrior, you are locked down with the people that you're playing with. This is the first game I can remember. Now 2 and 3 may have done this too, but I'm not sure to this effect. Like, you start with these characters, and then some characters, they leave. Kane disappears after that thing blows up. He goes away. And then you find Tella, you know, and you go with these different characters and different portions of the game, have different characters that join you, and then they go away. The only real constant is Cecil. He's the only real constant. And that's also a very, really neat thing about the game.
Something that you mentioned that jumped out at me, the relationship between Rosa and Cecil. I think it also interesting that they make Kane the third wheel, because it's very heavily implied that he also loves Rosa.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting because they're best friends, but I mean, obviously Rosa likes Cecil, and it was just an interesting dynamic to throw in. You just kind of feel bad for Kane, you know?
You do, man. Ugh, Kane. Manipulated by black magic, man.
The worst magic.
Yeah. And Rosa's magic.
I see what you did. John, what about you? What about the characters struck you?
Well, I kind of like what you were saying earlier. I do feel like there's something grown up about these characters, which I feel is something that as the Final Fantasy series has gone along, it's kind of lost. I mean, there's characters of all different age ranges, experience levels, and I do like that Cecil is experienced, that he's part of this evil army at first. It's such a cool way to start the game. I do feel like as the series has gone along, it's become a lot of like punk-haired 17-year-olds with lots of things strapped to their legs and arms, and they just, you know, the characters don't jump out as me as much as you go along. But in this game particularly, there's so much.
Well, you don't know if they had things strapped to their legs. They had like 5 pixels.
That's true. They could have a lot of things strapped to their legs.
You know, that's interesting though. Like thinking of the main protagonists for 7, 8, 9, and 10, they're all like 19, 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Yeah, and
you
13.
Know, yeah. Even Cloud, who is an accomplished warrior, is still like 17 or 18.
Yeah.
At this. Yeah.
And also just how flawed the characters are. It's so gratifying to see the characters grow and change and work through their flaws in a way that I think a lot of games don't even begin to attempt, you know?
You see a lot of characters making mature decisions in this game. The one that jumps out to me is Palum and Porum, the two kids who join you and then sacrifice their lives to save you. There's a lot of people sacrificing themselves to save Cecil.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Yang, Sid, Palum, Porum, Tella, I mean, yeah. All of these people are like, Cecil just keeps losing his party and then gets a new one, and then he loses it and then he gets a new one. John, did that bother you as a player? I mean, because that's very different from the first Final Fantasy, which gives you your party, and that's who you have.
Oh, no, I love having the uncertainty of you never know if you're going to lose a character. Mm-hmm. I love that characters, they're not afraid to kill a character, that they're not all immortal, you know, that, like in life, people die, and people sacrifice, and people get into dangerous situations that they can't get out of. I think that just adds, that heightens the adventure, that heightens the intensity, you know, it's...
That also seems like something that's been lost in newer games. The mortality of important characters. Mm-hmm. So much so that Game of Thrones really latches on to our psyche and culture right now, because it's so different that important people die.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to hear that 2 does that.
I mean, everyone continues to lose their shit. Sorry if I said the word.
You're fine.
Because Aeris gets killed in Final Fantasy VII. Mm-hmm.
Spoiler!
But what about Tella in Final Fantasy IV? You know, like, there's death in these games, too. And they're shocking and they're sad. And just because they're sprites doesn't mean they're not impactful or meaningful.
Oh, you said so much. I want to jump on. Scott, I want to jump back to you real quick.
I just want to add one thing to that, too. And one of the other things, it's like the Palom and Perome, like, they die. The walls are closing in. Like, everybody's going to die. They know the only way that they can save everybody is to sacrifice themselves, to turn into stone, to keep the walls from closing. But that's horrible and sad, and everybody gets sad. But not only that, the rest of the game, every time you walk through the castle, you walk by their stone bodies. Like, you are reminded the entire game that those poor kids sacrificed themselves so everybody could live. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Did the rotating cast of characters, like having cool people come into your party but then possibly leave forever, bother you, Scott?
No. I think it's a perfect balance. This balance is even more perfected in Final Fantasy VI, because you got to actually choose who was in your party. In IV, you can't choose who's in your party. You have a set path of who's in your party. But there's not too many characters. There really isn't too many characters. And every character is fully developed. Every character has a very specific personality. And that's very rare for that many characters to have such a specific personality, specific character traits. They all have special, you know, job abilities. They use the job system, but they give, you know, they basically give each character a job. They haven't really told you that, but they've given them a specific job with a special ability, which is awesome. They come and go, you know, and you don't get too mad when you build them up and then they leave, because, you know, a new guy comes in who's that same level and with a different awesome ability.
Yeah, it might be simple, but every character in this game has a want. Tella wants to avenge the death of his daughter. Edward wants to be brave and live a good life for Anna, who died. Yang wants to save his country. Everyone has a want. Edge wants to fucking fight the Fiend of Fire and
yes.
hopefully win. Oh, Edge, you comic plucky character. And that was so fascinating, and by today's standards, the script is not brilliant, and the translation for sure had some interesting choices, you spoony bard. But it's this is the game that gave us you spoony bard.
Oh, that's where it came from.
This is where it came from.
This is it.
Yep. But yeah, all the characters had interesting goals that they wanted, and sometimes they lined up with Cecil, and sometimes they didn't, and it was so interesting. Anything else you guys want to say about the heroes? Because I feel we have to touch on the villain.
I'm good.
Golbez, the villain, the villain you think is the villain of this game. He's good. I personally don't find him a very compelling villain. The biggest thing that's really compelling about him is, spoiler alert, the big twist that comes near the end of the game where you find out he's Cecil's brother. And this whole idea of, like, light and dark and people following what's in their hearts is really, really pushed at that point in the game. When you find out that Golbez has been manipulating the kingdoms and is acquiring all these crystals for some purpose, later on you find out that he is Cecil's brother. And you find out that he is being corrupted by an even more evil black magic force, which is weird. So you have Golbez corrupting Cain, but then you have Golbez being corrupted from the moon. It's really weird. But when you find out that he's his brother, Cecil has this moment where it could have just easily have been me. I was evil. I was killing people. And it was just by happenstance that I was not chosen to be manipulated. And that was really interesting to me as a kid, and that still is interesting to me, that it's kind of dumb luck. Like, Cecil is partially lucky. Like, he does become a paladin, and he sheds his evil path. But there was a time where he could have very easily been the main evil villain of this video game. What did you guys, like, how was your reaction to that as far as Golbez and him as a villain, and then the big reveal that he's his brother?
I really loved that, what you were just saying about how Cecil has that moment where he's like, it could have been me. Because there's something about him as a protagonist where he's not, like, the chosen one. You know, there's so many of these games where the person is the chosen one, and he has to learn to, you know, accept his greatness. Whereas Cecil has to redeem himself and prove his greatness, which I think is makes him much more interesting. As far as Golbez, I found him to be an adequate villain. I didn't think he's among the best Final Fantasy villains. He's sufficiently brooding and evil, and there's, you know, the creepy music that underflows all he says, and
the organ pipe music whenever he walks in. It's very, very dramatic.
Until that moment, he's a pretty one-note villain, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Who, now I'm just curious, who is one of your favorite villains from Final Fantasy?
Oh, Kefka is just...
Mm-hmm. It's obviously Kefka. It can't be any...
He has so much personality, and he's so just despicable.
Yeah.
And evil and hateful.
And he starts off as so puny. Like, in the beginning of the game, he's not even the big bad guy. He's just a stupid, crazy general, and you kick his ass, like, a few times. And he's the fucker who gets the great, amazing power. And now he's, like, a demigod. It's like, you never hate anybody more than you hate Kefka. And Golbez was really cool. And Golbez was scary. And the twist that Golbez was your brother made him a really cool villain. But the ending of the game, you're fighting Zemus. And you're like, wait, yes, Zemus, you were controlling everybody. And you were doing all that. But you didn't personally. Well, I kind of did. Because I did this. But what'd you personally do to me? Well, you did this and this. And so, okay, I don't like you. I'll kill you. But when you get to the end of 6, Kefka, you're like, you're going to die, Kefka. I've been building up in the dinosaur area. And you're going to get ultimate 50,000 times. And you just can't wait to see him just crumble to pieces. So it is the one glaring defect of Final Fantasy IV is the bad guy. I mean, he's good. He's fine. He captures Rosa, and he's about to, you know, put a giant axe or the thing. He's about to kill her, and you save her, and, you know, he's kind of evil, but he's just, you know, he can't compare.
I think he was developed for the time.
Sure.
Yeah. He was just kind of... He wasn't... At first you think he's evil for just being evil, but then you find he's manipulated, which is a little bit better than Bowser from Mario. But yeah, he... I think he was as probably as developed as you could get at that time. I would like to give a shout out, though, to his four fiends, his four generals.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Oh, they're great, yes.
Yeah, and each one being based on an element was really fascinating to me, because when you meet the first one, then you realize, oh god, I have to fight three more of these guys. And especially Rubicant, the fiend of fire, he was always my favorite, because he
very
was
noble,
such...
noble enemy.
Yeah, he was so honorable. He would heal you right before you fought him, because he wanted a fair fight, and that was just so... That was so cool to me. That was such a cool... To have an honorable villain. I really liked that.
Yeah. The villains were cool. Like the way the king was actually the water fiend. Mm-hmm. Like, come to find out, he was the water fiend the whole time. Yeah, the fiends in this game were very, very well done. And very well developed.
So how are you doing, my outcast? Have we struck upon anything that sounds really interesting to you, or?
Yeah, definitely. It's hard to pass judgment on the game since I haven't played it, but you guys bring up a lot of stuff that sounds interesting to play through. I guess my biggest thing would be that, I mean, whoever this villain is, he can't stand up against Sephiroth. Am I right, Scott?
Oh god, I didn't...
And all this hero, this Cecil guy, sounds pretty great, but he's no Cloud. Am I right, Scott?
He's no Cloud. Oh, jeez. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, you can say, of course, Cloud would beat Cecil's ass. Of course he would, because Cloud was imbued with all of these amazing, you know, busters and swords and all these cool attacks and limit breaks that Cecil didn't have yet. Sephiroth is the best part of Final Fantasy VII. He is a fantastic villain. I have one major problem with VII that has nothing to do with that. And
what's your major problem, Scott? Yeah, I want to hear it.
It's the ending. It's you literally spend 60 hours on that game and you uncover the craziest, most convoluted plot. You find out that, you know, your memory's all wiped and this person you thought was Zack was actually you, and you had already killed Sephiroth at the beginning, and he's the other people you're fighting, and the person who actually killed Ares is not Sephiroth at all. It was actually one of his clones, which is weird. And Sephiroth's been controlling everything from the live stream. Weird. Okay, cool. And you get to the end, you're like, oh my god, we're going to stop Meteor, what's going to happen? And you kill Sephiroth, and then you spend 100 and some hours playing that game, and the ending takes about 30 seconds. And like, you see Meteor about to crash, and then you see an image of Aeris, and then the Meteor stops, and it breaks. Flash to 1,000 years later, and there's Red 13 running with kids. And that's it.
Red 13 had a wife, that's great.
Yay, kid wife.
Yay! That's it? Are you kidding me? Like, it's the biggest cock tease of any freaking game in the entire world. And how it's hailed as, like, the best RPG or the best Final Fantasy really makes me mad. Because when you watch the ending of Final Fantasy IV, the game we're talking about, it's a great, wonderful Star Wars ending. There's a wedding, everybody's happy, it's confetti throwing, and you sum up some character parts. Final Fantasy VI ending goes to each individual character and tells you kind of what they're doing and what's going on, included with a 45-minute grand overture of this beautiful music. And Final Fantasy VII, it's like, I don't know, fuck you, you'll buy it. It's like, oh, come on. It's so disheartening. And that's why anytime people talk about Final Fantasy VII, it makes me angry.
Thank you. Thank you for derailing my podcast.
Yeah, that's what the podcast is there for.
It's...
But it does, Scott touched on something that is the only negative thing that I see for Final Fantasy games, is how long they take.
You know, just to speak to that, Final Fantasy IV, I feel, is a good length. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Mm. And that's including, like, getting all the secret summons and the best weapons. I mean, you don't have to do that, but it doesn't take too much longer to do that. I feel, if you know what you're doing, I think the last time I played this game, honestly... Which isn't really fair, because I had played it so much. I got through it in, like, 16, 18 hours. And that was getting everything. And leveling up a decent amount, but not too much.
There's not a lot of fat in it. I think another thing that happened later in the series is where you basically finish the story, and then you have, like, 15 hours of leveling up to get to, like, the last few battles, you know, where you kind of just get, like, let loose in the world. And I don't know. I like a little more structure with my story. I like a little more. And I feel like this Final Fantasy IV did a great job of guiding you through each segment, so there's not, like, this big, like, open-ended spot at the end where you just have to, like, keep leveling up for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours while there's no story going on, you know?
Yeah, Final Fantasy IV, for Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI all strike this really good balance of finding secrets, making the secrets accessible. I feel now you have to buy a strategy guide or look on a FAQ to find everything in a Final Fantasy. 12, 13... 10 were all pretty bad about that.
I think 12 was the worst. Like, the best weapon in a game you can only get by not opening 12 treasure chests.
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody who would ever figure that out. Your main goal in a Final Fantasy game is to open freaking treasure chests. Like,
I feel for...
By the way, listeners, I love Final Fantasy. I don't know why I'm coming off as so anti. I'm actually not...
What did Final Fantasy do to you?
I actually love Final
Fantasy. Where did it hurt you?
I riled Scott up.
You did. Yeah. Let's talk about the active time battle system. For my experts, can one of you define this battle system that Final Fantasy gave us in this game? That they would continue to use for the rest of the series, up until 12, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Every character, including the enemies, basically has a bar. And the bar moves as quickly as your character's speed or agility or whatever stat they've chosen for that. And it moves. And when it's ready to select, then your character can attack. While you're making the choice to decide what's going on, everybody else's bar, including the enemy, is still charging, is still going. So you've got to think quick, and if you don't, the enemies are going to get more attacks in. So it really puts it's a little less strategy because you got to act quicker, but it's a little more intense because you got to think quick. So you can't sit there and be like, okay, I'm going to have Cecil attack the imp in the front row. I'll have Rosa cast a wall spell. No, it's got to... Bam, go. Got to do it quick. Because if you don't do, they're going to kill you really quickly.
Yeah, and certain actions took more time or less time to perform. So that it added that element to it, too. And every game that Squaresoft put out after this, at least in like Final Fantasy, Secret, you know, Chrono Trigger and whatnot... all kind of adopted and used the system. It's a really good system. Like that, it didn't really jump out at me at the time, but in hindsight, I think it's really brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. Because I'm playing, like I said, I'm playing 3 right now, and it's kind of the old crockpot system where you kind of set it and forget it, where you say what everyone's going to do, and then you just press X, and then...
Crockpot system.
Then you just wait and watch while everything happens. Then you wait your turn again, and then you know... Whereas the active time battle is much more, you're constantly working, you're constantly thinking, you're constantly involved and engaged. And I agree. Like, since this was kind of one of my first big role-playing games that I played, I didn't have the context to know like how great this battle system was. But since I've played more games and I've gotten older, I've realized how solid it actually is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good system. I really like it. And I feel it really influenced a lot of other role-playing games and games in general. Kind of like Z-targeting for Zelda. Mm-hmm. It's so good, so good. You can turn the system off, though. You can make you can turn the active time system off and do it like the
just
old...
Just a straight turn-based.
If you want. But it's not as challenging to do that. So, one thing I feel we should talk about is the presentation. Final Fantasy is... generally known as cutting-edge graphics and sound, and we'll talk about the score to this game in just a moment. I was not entirely blown away by the graphics. I think they are really good. I thought it was fascinating to see, like, when you walk into the mist cave, there's a layer of mist on everything. When you walk into certain dungeons, you can kind of see in the additional side-scrolling background that you're high up or, you know, you're in this massive cave or giant robot. But I didn't think this game, I didn't think Final Fantasy IV was doing anything more than Mario World. And that may speak to just how phenomenal Mario World was, technically on the Super NES, or Link to the Past. I feel both of those games are beautiful and do amazing things with the Super Nintendo. But it's a role-playing game, so I don't know how far it needs to push the graphic envelope. What do you think? It doesn't look as good as Final Fantasy VI, obviously, but that came later, so.
Yeah, it's hard to consider the graphics of 4, because you look at 6, and you're like, oh, well, it could have done this, it could have looked like this. I think they're okay. I don't think they're a centerpiece of the game. I don't think the game's known for its graphics by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it does a good job of creating a cohesive universe and a cohesive world and immersing you in that. So,
Scott, what about you?
You know, the graphics on Final Fantasy IV really do the job. They do what they need to do. It's hard to compare it to VI. I feel like VI literally pushed the limits of the Super Nintendo cartridge. It really, really, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game for the Super Nintendo. And Final Fantasy IV, the graphics aren't memorable, but they do the job. And compared to this regular Nintendo, like the graphics for the spells, like that was all new. You know, the graphics for the spells and the graphics for the hitting. I mean, it was a big jump from the first Final Fantasy. I mean, the first Final Fantasy, the characters were literally on a second, you know, little side screen. They really weren't on the main screen of the enemies. The background was black. I think even Final Fantasy II and III both had black background. So the escalation was huge from where it was. But I don't think it looked as good as Mario World or Link to the Past, which were both first games on the Super Nintendo. But Square figured out how to make a game for the Super Nintendo, because Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI are just gorgeous.
Yeah, even Secret of Mana and Secret of Evermore are both very gorgeous. One thing I will say about the graphics, I feel no Final Fantasy, the something about how the numbers bounce when you hit something in this game, when you see the damage, just looks really cool. And they didn't get that bounce quite the same in 5 or 6 after.
You're right about that. That's a very interesting thought. You're right.
It's just something about the bounce of the numbers.
It's kind of cool, the bouncing numbers.
Yeah, especially when you have all 4 numbers appear, when you do a massive amount of damage. It looks cool. I just really like how they did it. This is also the first game that gave us summon monsters, at least for America. Yeah, this is the first time you get Shiva, Ifrit, Bahamut. And though simple, those graphics were really cool, in addition to the spell effects. The spell effects looked really awesome, too. I always enjoyed casting a spell, because it looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
Especially, like, Holy or Meteor. Oh, man, I love hurting the bad guys that.
Yeah, man.
I do want to talk about the soundtrack, which, I feel probably a lot of people point to Final Fantasy VI as a high point for the series as far as the soundtrack, but I've seen a lot of love for 4 and a lot of lists of sound songs from 4 that are right behind Final Fantasy VI. We talked about it in the video game music podcast, but this has got one of my favorite songs in a video game ever, which is the Mist Cave, or the first time you go into a dungeon, that kind of Danny Elfman-esque da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da playing in the background, which is just gorgeous. And one of the first times in a game where I stopped, put my controller down, and just listened to the soundtrack.
And wept openly.
And wept openly, and was like, one day I'm going to talk about this with 3 other guys.
you know what's funny about that is I love the Mist theme, but it's like a cave theme. It's like a cave theme. You're kind of in a cave when you do that. My other favorite Final Fantasy song is from Final Fantasy VI, which is the cave theme, which is another great, like, Nobuo Uematsu just really knows how to write a cave theme.
It's like, we need a cave theme. Oh, I got you covered.
I know a guy.
I'm on it.
Even the battle music, I love the boss battle music. Whenever you fight a boss, it just gets so intense. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite boss battle music themes. When you fight the 4 elemental fiends, that music is so desperate. I mean, I think it's literally called the Desperate Fight. the music just does a fantastic job of heightening the situation that you are in. For my experts, is there any song or moment that the music jumped out to you?
Well, I think when you first get to the moon,
ooh,
like how just the mood changes and the whole sonic landscape changes once mm-hmm. you get there. It's so cool and so eerie and so evocative. Also, just that, again, that theme when you set out on the adventure at the beginning with that scroll, the title scroll, or not the title scroll, but the narration scroll, it's just so crisp and exciting and, like, epic. I keep saying the word epic, but, like, it evokes such a sense of wanderlust and adventure. I love it. I love it. That's one of my favorite moments of the whole game.
Scott, what about you?
I mean, the Red Wings theme is just great. You know, I mean, it's very Star Wars. I mean, it really is. It really sounds like, you know, they got the music for the Empire, you know, that driving, you know, evil airship music. And, you know, I remember one time you're flying in the game and you start hearing the music and then three of the Red Wings show up and they come and attack your ship. Oh, it's awesome. Another one of my favorites is the marionette puppet song. What is it? The dancing Calabigera? I don't even know how to say that. The dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so creepy. You're going to get a crystal, right? And it's the dancing doll that comes and attacks you, and that creepy carousel-y theme starts playing while you attack that. Oh, it's awesome.
That's awesome. That's actually a piece of isn't that a piece of Russian folk music or something?
Oh. I didn't know that.
I want to say I've heard that outside of a game. It's not native to Final Fantasy. I know the song that the dancing girls, if you talk to any of the dancing girls, what they dance to, that is a Russian song called the Saber Dance, I think, is what it's called. It's an old Russian song from like the 18th century, I think. But yeah, I think there are two instances that they're using music outside of the scope of Yumatsu's actual creations.
Is there an overworld theme?
Oh my gosh.
It's beautiful.
I'm pretty sure I've heard it.
You probably
even
have.
Even though I haven't played the game. And I love it. I think it's beautiful.
I feel Final Fantasy does their overworld themes right.
Yeah.
It's the theme. He just writes it very well. Kind of like cave themes.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy IV has a just gorgeous overworld theme. It's not the charging epicness of the first Final Fantasy, and it's not the Terra theme or searching for friends from Final Fantasy VI. It's somewhere in between. It's mystical a little bit. It's
serene.
Yeah.
And just pretty.
There's a Celtic arrangement of it that is
oh, really?
Gorgeous. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good theme. They do their themes right.
Oh, yeah. Their overworld themes are always so impressive.
The theme of every single Final Fantasy game is fantastic. Every single one of them.
Jeremy, let me check in with you. Do you have any questions so far, my outcast?
I was actually wondering how this game treated the overworld aspect of like free reign going around the world. Was there? I'm guessing it started out on a pretty tight storyline, and then you got to a point where you got to adventure and find things.
Yeah, they
on your own.
They do that. And you get three overworlds.
Yes, three.
Yes. You get the main overworld, and then you get the underworld. You go underneath the planet, which is really cool. And then you go to the moon.
And you get an overworld up there?
Yeah.
Wow.
The moon is the smallest. There's not as much to do there because it's very much near the end of the game. But there are some really good secrets hidden there.
You only have so much room on the cartridge.
Yeah, and the moon is... Oh, it's so hard. It's so cool, but it's really hard. That final dungeon. Ugh. Yeah. So many secrets hidden in that final dungeon that you can skip if you want to. Hmm. Or you can... get that. There's a sequence in the final dungeon where I'm going off on this because it's so cool. The best weapons are all guarded by something horrible.
Classic.
And like when you get to the weapon, like you see they've actually animated the weapons, like it's a small sprite, and you're like, oh my gosh,
I want that.
What is that sword? And you walk up to it, and then the screen darkens, and you hear a voice, and it's like, this weapon is a threat to my master, so I must kill you so you never take it. And like then you go into a very hard fight, and each weapon, whether it's a weapon or a piece of armor in that final dungeon, is guarded by something awful.
That's so cool that they made it real obvious.
Yeah, and it's not just like monsters, like each one talks to you mm-hmm. before it fights you and is like, this was a weapon that was said to destroy pure evil, so it has been sealed away and guarded by me, and now you must pass my test to, you know. It was really cool.
Was this the first game where they did these, like, super powerful weapons that you could get and, like, strive to get, but you didn't need to?
That's an interesting question. My experts, have you ever not gotten the weapons? I've never fought the final boss without the best equipment.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was... Well, the first Final Fantasy, like... even like Dragon Warrior, like remember Dragon Warrior, like the best three weapons, Edric's sword and shield and armor, are like not even, they're hidden on squares and you just have to like randomly find them. I'm not too sure. The Mass Moon and the Excalibur in the original Final Fantasy, are they sneakily hidden or they're just in treasure boxes, right?
The Mass Moon is guarded in the final dungeon and it's really amazing. The Excalibur you have to make and it's
That's easy,
skip it.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. You really need that crystal sword because Final Fantasy IV. I don't think we've mentioned this yet, but I think it's the most difficult Final Fantasy game out of every single one of them. I'm going all the way. Every single one of them. 10, 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. All of them. I think Final Fantasy IV is the most difficult. Mainly because the most difficult boss is the last of the game, which is not true in almost any other game, I think. Like, you know, that's not the case. But, like, that ending boss is horrible. It's really tough to beat.
I'm trying to figure out if I agree with you or not. Because technically...
You agree with me. Think about it. No, well, because in Final Fantasy VI, another game that the hardest boss was the end, there were so many ways that you could build up your stats that your characters could be godlike. So many ways in Final Fantasy VI that you could max out your vigor and max out your magic and the Genji Glove and the Offering and the Ultima Spell. There were ways you could become a god in Final Fantasy VI. In Final Fantasy IV, there was not. All you could do was grind or cheat with the duplication item thing. Other than that, when you go through that last dungeon, when you get to the final stretch going up to Zemeris, you're fighting red dragons who can kill you in one hit. I mean, it is brutal. It is a brutally difficult game, which is why in the iPhone version, they make it so you can lower the difficulty, because they also know how hard it is.
I half agree with you, Scott. I think the first version of Final Fantasy IV that we got, when it was labeled 2, they watered it down for America and took
that
out...
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, they
I
took out...
Speaking of that one, yeah.
Yeah. They took out things, they took out abilities, but they also made the monsters easier. I think the proper Final Fantasy IV that you can get now is pretty difficult. You do have that item duplication glitch in there still if you really need a little help, but that's not really that different from like equipping the Genji Glove and the Offering, you know, like you can still game the system a little bit, but if you don't, it is one of the harder ones, I think, for sure. John, what do you think?
You know, it's funny because it was the first one I beat. So in my mind, it's never been the hardest one, but you bring up a lot of good points that it is one where you really can't become, like you said, like these immortal beings that can just destroy anything. It's much more of a photo finish in that sense where you're you just have to be strong enough. So I don't disagree. I don't know if I agree, but I don't disagree.
I think Final Fantasy for the NES was really hard, but part of it is bad design. You can't save in the final dungeon. You have to sit down and plan to beat the game for the next 3 hours and go through that last dungeon.
Good God.
Yeah, that's really hard. And also, just the system on the NES was not as good as it is in 4.
But once again, you could game that system because if you had the Grandmaster and you unequipped him, he did like 1 to 2,000, and Chaos only had 3,000 hit points. So in 2 hits, he was dead. So that's why I say there was really, you know, that final stretch in Final Fantasy IV, you know me, Chris, I max out my characters before, like, I go to do anything. Like, it's just the way I play RPGs. And you think about Sephiroth, he's easy to beat. Once Cloud is a god, he's easy to beat. You think about Idea and, you know, the sorcerer in Final Fantasy VIII. You think about the end of Final Fantasy IX, you know, Necron or whatever his freaking name was. These bosses never, ever gave me trouble. Never. Never one of them. I shattered Kefka in, you know, Genji Globin Offering. Kefka's dead. Zemus, when he turns into Zemeros, that is a battle. Like, there's really no way to game that. The only way to do it is to do that duplication glitch, which is not really, that wasn't really meant, you know, as, you know, that was just, that's a glitch.
Now, Scott brings up a great point. I can't speak to which one I think is the hardest, but I can speak to which Final Fantasy I think is the easiest. And that is the only Final Fantasy that I've beaten, Final Fantasy IX.
Oh!
You now, think I haven't beaten them all, mostly because I give up somewhere along the way, either on 7, which I've played twice, at the end between when you start out and right before Sephiroth, I always get bored leveling up and then just go do something else. Final Fantasy IX was so short and so easy that I was able to complete it.
Wow!
Yeah, the main quest of Final Fantasy IX is actually very easy. Only if you have to level up to beat Ozma, that's the only hard part of the game, because the only way to get the highest levels is to fight those little sheep creatures, and they're so hard to beat because they drop Comet 2 on you and it'll wipe out your entire party. It's a real pain to max yourself out in Final Fantasy IX. Final Fantasy VII, the bosses, Genova is really hard. Like, you've got to level yourself up. But I had already done that to beat, you know, Ruby and Emerald Weapon, so it didn't really matter.
Do you have any other questions? Did you ask about Overworlds? Is that the question you asked that we got sidetracked on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. How does this work? Well, we answered it. It has 3 different Overworlds.
It's surprisingly linear at first, but it hides it very well.
Cool.
Final Fantasy VI is very linear at first, but again,
It
hides it very well. Although it does a really cool thing where you have 3 stories that you can choose to play in any order.
Oh. So
that's cool. I don't want to lavish love on 6. We'll get to that someday. but 4, there's a lot of instances where you'll enter into a new section of the world map or go into the underworld, and then it's like, oh, well, I'm supposed to go here, but there's this cave over here I can go explore. I'm supposed to go to this cave, but there's these other 2 towns. Oh, I wonder if I go there. It does a good job of keeping you on track, but then opening up your playground more and more and more.
Cool.
And then by the end of the game, you can go anywhere, and that's when you really get to explore. It's good. It's a beautiful overworld, too. Just something about the green of the grass, or when you go underground, the lava, the color of the lava, just all the vibrant colors look great. It's a little Mario World-esque. I feel Final Fantasy VI is a little more muted, but it's also more artful. So,
cool.
Yeah. So, my experts, I just want to throw out some fun questions to you two to answer, and I'll answer each question first to give you a quick moment to think. Coolest moment in the game that you remember that really stuck out to you. And I'll go first. Scott, you already mentioned it. The beginning of the game, when you see the 5 airships flying and you hear that march playing, I thought that was a really fantastic way to start the game. And it really grabs you right away. There are other moments in the game that are fantastic and are beautiful, but I think that opening moment, it's kind of like the train scene in Final Fantasy VII, Like, it just grabs you and you are on board. So, or even the march in Final Fantasy VI to the town of Narsh. Like, their openings, they generally do their openings pretty well. But I feel Final Fantasy IV has a really good one. So, John, what about you? Is there a moment in the game that really jumps out at you?
Probably when Tella dies, when he casts Meteor, depending on the version you're playing. And just because it was such a... Because he's such a flawed character, and he... You love him, but you also see how he's blinded by his rage. Mm-hmm. And to see him self-destruct like that brings, I think, the storytelling to a new level.
It's really sad because it doesn't work either.
Yeah.
Like, Golbez survives.
Exactly.
So it's a really sad death. And he's the one character who, like, sacrifices themselves and is dead. The kids do come back.
Yeah.
Yang comes back. Sid is okay. But Tella is the one who actually dies.
Self-destructs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sad.
And he's got such a great haircut, too. It's so sad to see go.
He's such an interesting design. Like, his Dr. Wily hair, but he's got his, like, two spectacles. His purple robe. He looked really cool.
Yeah.
He looked awesome. Scott, what about you?
Let's go when you unlock the spaceship and you get to go to the moon. We're talking near the end of the game, and we talked about the moon, but the process of finding the ancient, whale. What was it called? The lunar whale, right?
Yep.
You know, finding that, because it's so cool when you think about ancient technology that's more advanced than current technology.
Mm-hmm. That's always a neat concept.
Yeah, so finding that whale and, you know, getting aboard and then you blast off to the moon. I mean, you're just not expecting that. You know, it's really cool. And one other little moment I'm going to piggyback on, and like an honorable mention, it's a very small, simple moment, but it's funny as a kid, like the things that you remember, and I remember this moment so well. And it's I think it's earlier in the game when you're trying to get one of the crystals. You're just trying to get one of the crystals before Golbez does, and you're like, oh, I finally got to the crystal room. Here we go. And you walk two steps, and the floor gives out, and you fall all the way down, and you're not at the crystal anymore. And I remember, no, it was right there. I had the crystal. What happened? But I remember that moment just really sticks in my mind too.
Cool. My next question, rapid fire question: hardest fight in this game. I'll go first. I will say the Fiend of Earth, the first fiend that you fight, is a really hard battle because you fight him as he's a lich, and then you realize, oh, healing magic will hurt him, so you can use that on him if you wish, or fire will hurt him, and you defeat him. Then you cross the bridge, and he attacks you from behind in his second, more powerful form. And this time, he is not weak to healing magic. He's still weak to fire, though. But if you don't know that he's going to do that, suddenly your party is at a very disadvantage, and all of your healers, your wizards, are on the back row for him to hit right away. And he has a vicious poison attack. I remember that fight establishing these four fiends that you have to deal with are very serious threats, and it was a really hard fight if you're not prepped for it.
Yeah.
John?
The first time I played, I had such a hard time with the Maga Sisters.
Oh.
Just because I didn't understand. Like, it took me a godly amount of time to realize, like, what order I had to kill them in.
Yeah. They're also really obnoxious.
And they're just like, annoying as hell.
I'm gonna kill you! I'm Cindy!
Oh, my God.
It's like Bye Bye Birdie coming to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not only is it, like, a tough battle, but they're so freaking obnoxious. Other than that, probably the water elemental, for some reason, always gives me trouble just because I can never seem to get the timing right, because when he goes in his shell and when he comes out.
Or he builds his tidal
wave. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough timing battle. I'm so glad you mentioned the Mega Sisters. Oh, God. Oh, God, I can't stand them. Scott, what about you?
Look, I'll say it again. The most difficult battle in this game is the final boss, and here's a couple of reasons why. These are just insurmountable facts. One, Zeromus has more than double the hit points of any other boss in the game, number one, okay? Two, Zimmerus uses the Big Bang. You guys remember the Big Bang attack that he does?
Yeah, it's really impressive, but it really hurts.
It's ridiculous. It's like 4,000 damage to your entire party, and he uses it very, very, very often. I mean, with this battle, you really it takes really sound strategy of, you know, Rosa keeping Cure 4 and Wall going and keep doing that, and then Rydia's got to cast Bahamut. Hopefully you got Bahamut, because if you didn't, you're in a lot of trouble. And Rosa's going to run out of MP because she's using Wall and using Cure 4, and then you've got to start burning all your elixirs, the final battle. And, of course, you have Edge literally just darting everything. You just start throwing every item you have, you know. Dart the Excalibur. Dart all those great swords you're just not using anymore. But that battle is a very, 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 very difficult final boss battle.
How are you doing, my outcast? Any questions?
No, I think I got them all answered.
Okay.
I was thinking through.
Are you going to play Final Fantasy IV?
At some point, yeah.
Okay. Well, I would like to mention there is a spectacular DS remake of Final Fantasy IV, fully done in 3D, kind of like the Final Fantasy III for the DS.
Oh, yeah, that would be the last question I have. Is what do you guys feel like is the most appropriate or best way to play it now with all the options that we have?
I really like the Super Nintendo 2D version. It just, even on the PlayStation, it runs really fast. The DS version is really cool to see this world brought to life in 3D, and it even has voice acting. Like, it has cinematics, like in-game cinematics with, like, popular voice actors like Yuri Lowenthal. I think Troy Baker is voicing Kane, and Troy Baker does a ton of shit now, but
Judy Dench is Golbez.
Judy Dench is Golbez.
Dang, Judy Dench. Is there a way to play the original style on the 3DS?
No. They're sold as two separate things. So, but if you have a PlayStation or a PS2 or a PS3...
Oh, not anymore. I modded my PS2 and eventually it just crapped out.
I would recommend the Super Nintendo version or the 2D version. The thing I don't like about the DS version is, because it's rendering in 3D, it looks gorgeous, but the game just runs a little bit slower. Like, it's really pushing the DS hardware, so it's just chugging, you know? It's just not as fast, and I don't like that. It is also really hard, so...
Scott, I know you've been a proponent of playing old 8 and 16-bit games on handhelds. What do you think the best way to play this game is?
I would have to disagree with Chris, and I would say that the DS is the best way to play on this. It's because they up the difficulty, so it's a big boys game, the DS version. The voice acting is fantastic, but that being said, I played the first version of this game literally 7 or 8 times, like complete all the way through, fully building up. So it was a nice breath of fresh air to see the tower in 3D, to see, you know, what the moon and the crystals and all that stuff, to see what that would look like in the 3D landscape. So any of the speed issues didn't bother me because I just wanted to see, you know, what this would all look like. And I'm always a fan of taking old games and updating them. I'm not such a purist that, you know, I need to have all the old stuff. That being said, the iPhone version, I've played a couple iPhone versions of the games, and they're fantastic. They're really great. So, you know, I would recommend both of them are going to be great, and they're going to be fine. If you play more DS, then get the DS version. If you play more iPhone games, get the iPhone game. That's what I suggest.
Cool. Thank you.
So my final question to my experts. Kind of a 1-2 punch. Does this game hold up? And is it the most important Final Fantasy? And I guess I'll start us off. I think it holds up. There are a variety of ways to play it, whether you want a more modern look on it through the DS, or if you don't mind retro graphics. the old style through virtual console on the Wii, PlayStation, or wherever. It's pretty accessible, and I think it looks great. I understand people have a hard time playing retro games sometimes, so that could be a barrier, but I would say look at the DS version. As far as, is this the most important Final Fantasy? That's a tough cookie for me to say, because this is really one of my favorite games. I don't know if it's my favorite Final Fantasy, that's a hard call, but I do realize I have a lot of nostalgia love for this game, and when I think of about replaying a Final Fantasy game, 4 is always at the top of the list. And I think I've replayed it the most. So, I guess I would have to say, no, I have an answer for this. I don't think it's the most important. I'm going to put that title probably on Final Fantasy VII. As much as I don't want to say that, that I think would be my answer. So, my other experts, what are your opinions? John, we'll start with you. What do you feel?
I think it definitely holds up. I think the storytelling and the characters are just as vibrant as ever, even if you play the old 2D version or if you're playing a new updated 3D version. I think it's hard to answer if it's the most important. I feel like Final Fantasy VI, though it is my favorite game, gets a lot of credit for stuff that Final Fantasy IV set up. Mm. I think in a way Final Fantasy IV was like the set and Final Fantasy VI was the spike. Mm-hmm. And people always remember the spike over who made the set. That's just a volleyball reference for everyone. and I think a lot of things that get a lot of ways we compare role-playing games today, we're comparing them to things that were started with Final Fantasy IV, like the active time battle system, mm-hmm. and the story and the music. And I think we always go to 6 as opposed to 4 because 6 is the more polished, the more impressive version of that era. But I think there's a lot in 4 that doesn't get its due. As far as being the most important, I don't know.
That's it's a tough question.
I feel like everything gets compared to Final Fantasy VI, so I'd probably say Final Fantasy VI is just by default the most important. But I feel like the core elements were really set in stone in 4.
Good answer. Very good answer. Scott, what about you?
Yeah, this is very difficult. The game definitely holds up. Every time I've replayed it, it's been a complete joy, and it's been awesome to replay it. So it definitely holds up in any format. It holds up on the DS, it holds up on the iPhone, it holds up on the PSP. I actually haven't played After Years. They made a sequel, After Years. Did you guys know that? I haven't played it.
Yeah,
I
don't know if it was okay. It's not that great.
Anyway, so that's why you didn't talk about it. But anyway, is it the most important? Gosh, I mean, Final Fantasy VI is the best Final Fantasy for every reason, but without Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI would not be what it was. Everything that Final Fantasy IV did, Final Fantasy VI did better. But the thing with having multiple overworlds, Final Fantasy VI does that too, but it does it better. The thing about, having multiple developed characters, Final Fantasy IV does that, Final Fantasy VI does it better. But really, Final Fantasy IV was the first to really do all of that. You know, the big twists and turns, there's a couple twists in Final Fantasy IV, there's even better ones in Final Fantasy VI. So it is a very important game when it comes to the development of Final Fantasy VI, in my opinion, the best Final Fantasy game of all time. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I actually think that you're right, Chris, that the most important Final Fantasy game is Final Fantasy VII, because it was the game that introduced people who don't know shit about Final Fantasy that Final Fantasy exists.
Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy VII was the first time I saw a commercial for Final Fantasy on TV.
Oh, I remember the Final Fantasy VI commercials.
What?
Yeah, they had with Mog behind a desk. He was like a boss, and he'd like blow people up with a spark.
What?
Yeah,
well, I remember. I don't remember this.
I know, I don't remember this.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I remember.
Ah.
But you're absolutely right. Final Fantasy VII was the one that broke through stateside and really brought the brand here. And then,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it really is the most important. I hate it so much. It is a fantastic game. The music is awesome. The battle system is great. The materia, all of that, the graphics, everything about that game is amazing. And the ending is just a piece of shit. And I'm so angry about that. And it's why I will never admit that that game is the best Final Fantasy, even though it probably is the most important. I will never, ever admit it until they fix the one glaring issue. I mean, every other game has, even freaking Final Fantasy 13, which has a crappy ass story, has a better ending than Final Fantasy 7.
Like, well, Scott, you've got to realize that they only had 4 discs, right? Or 2 discs? Or multiple discs.
Did you not get
3 discs?
Did you not get the extra disc? There's a the ending disc.
Yeah. Did you get the ending disc?
My freaking castle for an ending disc. Okay? Like anything. I would have given anything for an ending disc. Anyway, Final Fantasy IV, I think it's the most important game in terms of the development of Final Fantasy VI, which was the pinnacle of the old-style JRPG, which doesn't exist anymore.
All right. Well, with that, we have to bring our Final Fantasy IV discussion to a close, but don't worry, we will be talking about Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger in the not-too-distant future. So, Final Fantasy IV, we love you, we salute you, go play it if you have not. At this time, my experts and outcasts, if there's any other shows or things that you're working on that you'd like to plug, now is the time. And Scott, we'll start with you.
I'm in a band called Bourbon and Bliss. We're getting a lot of momentum going right now. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, also bourbonandbliss.com. Brand new album that's out. We just signed a licensing deal. Maybe it'll be on TV and I can pay off the $20,000 I spent to make the album. But yeah, man, check us out, bourbonandbliss.com.
Cool. I am in a improv team that performs every Friday at 8 p.m. at Collabor Action Theater. We're called Hello Donatello. We've been around for about three and a half years now. We love to do nerdy topics, deconstruct stuff, but also be raunchy at times. We're part of an organization called One Group Mind, and yeah, check us out on Facebook, Hello Donatello.
Awesome.
I wrote a show that's going to be going up at the Annoyance Theater. It will run Thursdays from November 6th to January 22nd at 8 p.m. Okay, yes. It's about college women's basketball coaches, and it's called Lady Balls. So if you want to come see a show called Lady Balls, check it out at the Annoyance.
Which everybody does.
That's a great name. You can find me around at the Public House Theater. I don't know when this episode will air, but I'm in a really fun show called A Game of Mobile Homes, which is a sketch parody of A Game of Thrones. It's getting some good momentum and press behind it, so if this episode comes out in November, please check it out. And if it comes out after that, then check out our reviews. Hopefully they were great. You can find me from time to time over on my friend's site, Blastro Podcast and Alka Hollywood. Other really good podcasts I highly recommend. And there might be some other podcast news and development that I can't quite speak to yet, but dear listener, hopefully when the time has come, you'll be excited for those announcements. So
Tease.
If you have any questions, comments, concerns, protests, topic suggestions, please email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming and discussing Final Fantasy with me. This has been great. God, I really, really like that game. So, Jeremy, hopefully we've made you a true believer.
Certainly a believer.
All right, sir. We'll take that. We'll take that. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and joining me today to talk about Final Fantasy IV have been
Scott Ross,
Jeremy Connie,
John Luce.
Thank you for listening and have a good night.